Luke chapter 10, starting at verse 25. Luke chapter 10, starting at verse 25. It's the parable of the Good Samaritan. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. "Teacher," he asked, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "What is written in the law?" he replied. "How do you read it?" Well, he answered, "Well, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." "You have answered correctly," Jesus replied. "Do this and you will live." But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, "Well, and who is my neighbor?" In reply, Jesus said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was. And when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. And then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper. 'Look after him,' he said, 'and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have.' Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers?" The expert in the law replied, "The one who had mercy on him." Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise." As is co-papa in this place, we're going to turn to the person next to you and share what stood out from this reading. So turn to the person next to you.
Awesome. Hey, real cool to be with you all this morning. Like Caleb said, my name's Nathan, and I'm the youth worker for the parish. Come on. Yeah. That wasn't even a young person, eh? Where's the youth group? Yes, thank you, man. I was really fishing for a day, so awesome. I grew up across the road from the Lynham family, and my parents still live across the road from the Lynham family, and they've got 3 kids around the same age as me and my sister, and we did everything together before school, went to school together, after school, but more importantly, we were in each other's pantry. Okay. Now there was the time. Where me and the older brother were teenagers at the time. He was slightly older than me, and he had the coolest Nissan Sentra that you have ever seen. It wasn't very cool, but we got cement bags and bricks, and we loaded the boot full just so the car would be a little bit lower and a little bit more cool. Good times. Very not cool. And there was the time I used to play golf. It's not my main claim to fame, but I used to play golf. And I was teaching one of the daughters to play golf. And so I said, you know, swing up over your shoulder and then over your other shoulder. And so, you know, showed her what to do and then stood back and she swung up over the shoulder and around the body. And I was kind of standing over this way and I saw the golf club come. Safe to say, first and last time coaching golf. But there was the other time we lived across the road from each other, and it wasn't a very busy road, and me and the other kids would kick the rugby ball back and forth across the road. And so we're there one afternoon kicking the ball around, and I see a car come down the hill. Mixture of probably peer pressure and ego. Oh, yeah, I've kicked this heaps of times. Actually, you know what? I reckon I could probably kick it and hit the house. No, actually, over the house. I'm that good. So good. I've done it so many times before. And so I see this car come down the road. It comes, I line it up, and kick it off the side of my boot. And lands square on the roof of the car. Pulls the handbrake up, screeches down the road, smoke from the tire comes out, and he stops. The driver opens the door, and it's a big Pacific Island man. He comes out. He doesn't say anything. You can tell, obviously, he's annoyed. He's just done a big skid in his car. Doesn't say anything. He doesn't look at us. Picks up the rugby ball, opens the door, puts it in his car, and drives off. This was my special rugby ball. I think this was, I can't remember exactly, but it felt like it was a birthday present or maybe a Christmas present. This thing was special. Every day after school, we'd be playing with this rugby ball. It was so special to me. In that moment, I have my first enemy. Now, all around me, in my friends, in my family, were racists. Other people of other ethnicities were the butt of my friends' and my family's jokes. And it was through this interaction of me horribly kicking a ball that I stepped into being a racist. Like I said, they were the butt. Other people of other ethnicities were the butt of my friends, my family's jokes. They were the butt of my jokes. Never did I think that I was wrong. Today we step into the parable of the Good Samaritan, read out by Caleb. Now, just a bit of context around the Good Samaritan. Now, we're on the road from Jerusalem down to Jericho, commonly known as the Way of Blood. This was a dangerous road that you don't travel. In fact, Jesus didn't use this road. He chose to go the long way around, the more safer route. Jerusalem sits in the hills at 300, roughly 360 meters above sea level. Now, Jericho sits 670 meters below sea level. It's about a 30-kilometer road, which is just shy of Martin from here. So to give you a bit of an idea, that's how long the road was. So we've got an altitude change of 1,000 meters. This road is steep. Now, Jerusalem, like I said, sits in the hill where you meet the moist, humid air from the sea, and then it goes down into the dry desert where Jericho is. So not only is it steep, not only is it a dangerous place of where robbers and stuff like to hang out, but it is dry, it is hot. In some places, this road is wide, but in other places, it's narrow. And I can only imagine that, say, the robbers had left this man half dead in those narrow spaces, literally the priest or the Levite would have had to step over the person that was half dead. Now, the priest, person of authority, of honor, of prestige. People would have just seen him fulfilling his priestly duties, blessing people, cleansing people, doing the purification process. They come to him with their sacrifices. Had the priest engaged with this half dead person on the road, he, in shame, would have had to turn around, walk back to Jerusalem and join the queue for purification. He would have been seen up the front leading the purification process and with his tail between his legs join the queue and start the purification process. It was wrong to it was against God's law to be unclean. Now, similar to with the Levite is the second in charge in the temple. They were responsible for keeping the worship going. And he chooses not to engage in the half-dead man. So these two felt like they were following God's law and God's call. God has called me to remain clean and to honor the law that God has set in my role here in the church. I need to keep serving. I am godly. I am upright. I am a righteous man. But they missed the point. The Samaritan, now again, the butt of all jokes in the time. He was the enemy. Now I wonder, as Jesus is telling this story, man gets beaten up halfway on the road and left for dead. The priest walks by, the Levite walks by. I wonder at the point that Jesus introduces the Samaritan, that the audience would have thought, oh, here we go. Okay, the Samaritan. Well, actually, it was probably the Samaritans that beat him up in the first place. Actually, there's probably just another Samaritan now coming in to finish off the job. If he was half dead before, he's going to be fully dead now. As what I wonder in that audience, right? They were hated. They were despised. They are the kinds of people that would do that. They were blamed for decades earlier, filling the church, filling the temple with dead bodies. They were despised. They were hated. They were mixed blood. They were foreigners. They were the Israelites' enemy. They were your enemy. They were my enemy. They were the kinds of people you yell out to get out of the church. You are not welcome here. There is hate. And there is passionate hate. The parable is asking us, who is my neighbor? Or better yet, who can I be a neighbor to? The lawyer listening to this story is shocked and he's uncomfortable to hear that the Samaritan, his hated enemy, is actually the good guy, is actually the hero. So what if we were to swap out the Good Samaritan? Perhaps someone that's a bit closer to home. That would change it to the parable of the good Pacific Islander. Parable of the good drug addict. Parable of the good boy racer. The good gangster. The good ex-partner. The good homeless man. The good refugee. The good atheist. The good oil tycoon, the good transgendered woman, the good Sunday Christian, the good criminal, the good unethical businessman, the good elderly person, the good annoying teenager. Whoever you recast in this parable, make sure it is someone who makes you feel uncomfortable. That shocks you. As I began my youth work, I found myself working with young Tongan and Samoan young people and within the Pacifica community. And I often found that no matter what I did, I felt like I was receiving and learning so much more about God's love and God's grace through them than I was showing them myself. My enemy from when I was younger had become my neighbor. So what is at stake? This is a quote from N.T. Wright. What is at stake now as it was then is, are we going to choose to live for our own isolated security and purity as the priest and Levite did? Or are we going to accept the challenge and call to extend God's love and grace to the rest of the world? No church, no Christian can remain content with easy definitions which allow us to watch and to step over the world lying half dead on the road. We're in a series of what does it mean to be a disciple? And I think it is to sit in this uncomfortableness. I don't know if that's a word. Uncomfortableness. And it is? Great. To sit in the uncomfortableness, to sit in the shock. But I think actually what's also beautiful and what I missed in preparing for this sermon is God, at the start, Jesus says, do this and you will have life. There is so much beauty and so much life that God wants you to have. And that's what discipleship is having life and life to the full. You can have life now. Life isn't in heaven. Life is now. It is right here. But life is hard. It's uncomfortable. It's shocking. We're going to move into a time of communion. Just as Caleb comes up, just encourage you to talk like we did at the start, to share with your neighbour what stood out from the passage. But what, if anything, has stood out from what I have shared? Who is your neighbour? Who are you called to be a neighbour to?